All right, hello everyone, and welcome back to Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host, Chris Platy, and for this very, very special episode of the NBA playoffs, and this preview is going to be very fun because I have a longtime guest, my friend, one of the first collaborators, actually the first collaborator on my podcast, Brad Tunney, now working at ESPN 100.9. He is a program manager and the Great Lakes Loon play-by-play broadcaster, Lance Cruz alumni, and the reason I got into podcasting. Brad Tunney, how you doing, sir?
Not too bad, man. How about yourself?
Man, I've been doing good, you know, just staying away with the podcasting grind and finishing up my last year at Michigan State. It's been a while. I mean, we talk off and on, but it's been a while since we've been actually able to collaborate on something.
Definitely, and I know the school grind is hard when you're trying to develop your own content. Everyone, you know, goes through that. And once you get done with school, obviously it'll be a lot better, a lot easier, a lot more time to focus on things.
Yeah, man. I'm excited. This is the first time you've been on the podcast since I named it. Back then,
that's
I didn't
right.
even have a name.
Yeah. And I catch every once in a while, a Strictly Hoop Talk. Like if it's a topic that I'm interested in, specifically during the NBA season, not as well versed in the hip hop world, but yeah.
Awesome, man. Yeah, no problem. I appreciate that. That's why I have both. You know, if one doesn't work, I got the other to fall back.
Right.
on.
Right.
All right. So we are gonna just go through each NBA playoff series and kind of give what we think is our key factor for that series and then make a prediction. So I'm not just doing this because it's the Pistons, but let's start in the East, and we'll go 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, and then 4-5, and we'll just kind of go in that order for each conference. So Bucks Pistons, to me, you know, this is going to be a very interesting matchup in the fact that I just really want to see what the Bucks are about. People have their doubts, but I don't have my doubts about the Bucks just because of the fact that they have upgraded from a non-factor as a head coach to an elite head coach. So I think that's going to make all the difference in the world. I do just wonder, Brad, do you think the Brogdon and Mirotić injuries slow them down at all in this series or not really?
Not in this series. Truthfully, if the Bucks wanted to, they could beat the Pistons by double digits every game, and I hope they do. Speaking from a Pistons fan perspective, I'm not really on the side of them making the playoffs. It's not something that I favor or agree with or wanted them to do. I was openly and, you know, passionately cheering for the Knicks on the final day of the regular season, as crazy as that seems. But they're in, so, like, I guess you could say, well, if you're a true Piston fan, you should be cheering for them. And, like, that's fine, but at the same time, I'm also an NBA fan. I certainly don't want to see the Pistons in the second round of the NBA playoffs because it's not a very good basketball team.
Oh, man, right away bringing me back down to reality. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I was an advocate for the Pistons making the playoffs, but I agree with you that that we definitely shouldn't be rooting to see the Pistons in the second round. I will say though, as somebody who purchased Game 3 tickets, that I don't want to see a sweep, but it's most likely going to happen. The only way the Pistons win a game is if Blake outplays Giannis in a game and Drummond is the clear third best player. That's the only way Detroit would even get a game in this series.
Definitely, and the way that Drummond's been playing, it's not crazy to say that, but the thing is, like, more times than not, I think Milwaukee's probably got the two best players on the floor, Middleton and Giannis, and that's no disrespect to Blake, but I just don't know how healthy he is going into this series. Yeah. And then Eric Bledsoe is very overlooked, and if they did have Brogdon, he'd be better than anyone outside of Drummond and Griffin. So, like, if you had to rank, like, the top eight guys on the two rosters, the Pistons only have two of them, and that's –
yeah,
that's what happens most nights. Outside of Drummond and Griffin, the team is just so bad.
Yeah, I agree with that. One quick question before we move on. You know, Drummond has always, and I'm sure you know this, Brad, has always struggled with stretch bigs, and Brook Lopez is the antithesis of that. So I don't know what the Pistons do about Giannis either. Like who guards Giannis in this series for Detroit? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know if like Thon Maker is a guy you want to try on him. Like being a former teammate and just having that length and mobility to do it. And I know like Thon has had to start games since the Blake injury, but Thon is like just not a starting NBA player. And unfortunately, the Pistons start three guys that wouldn't start on really any other playoff team in the NBA. So you're just going to have those matchups. And when the NBA playoffs come around, it's like, you know, one-on-one matchups are so key. So the fact that Giannis truly has nobody on the other side for the Pistons that's going to man him, like, sure, in the paint, can Drummond be a little bit of to contest him a little bit? Sure, but Blake is not big enough to stay with Giannis. And even if Blake does stay with Giannis, it takes away from his offensive ability. So
yeah,
I just don't know how much you can ask Blake to do.
Yeah, especially because, like you said, he's hobbled. And Drummond, I don't even know how much he'll be able to help at the rim because of Brook Lopez stretching the floor. So ultimately, it's going to be a very challenging series for Detroit. Detroit obviously matches up poorly with the Bucks, and so I have the Bucks in five. Again, that's probably just because I spent $50 on a ticket, so that's probably the only reason I have them in five, not four. Do you have this as a sweep?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be a sweep, I guess. You just never really know in the first round if a team's going to take a game off, specifically yeah. that game three when they come back to Detroit. So it should be a sweep. I mean, it was a sweep during the regular season when they outscored them by like 15 a game. And I mean, they're talent-wise, coaching-wise, they're just not close. So it could be a sweep, but you're right. They may sneak one in there.
Okay, let's jump to Toronto, Orlando. We finally get to see if Terrence Ross can ball in the playoffs. All these years about him talking about just being a playoff player, and we finally get to see it. I have Raptors in four to be quick with this one because I expect Orlando to play good defense. They have the number three defense in the NBA since February 1st, and they've been 21-9 in their last 30 games, so they've been unbelievable. But that being said, they just don't have the firepower the Raptors have, and the Raptors are every bit as good when locked and loaded, if not better on defense. So I don't see what advantage Orlando has. Orlando's main advantage, their main hub of offense, is Nikola Vucevic, and he's going to have Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka on him, and that's going to be tough for him to deal with on both ends of the floor, offensively and defensively, all series long. So I struggle to see how Orlando can get a game other than maybe they get that, like you said, with the Pistons, that energetic third game three win when the atmosphere is at its highest, because Orlando hasn't been in the playoffs in a while.
Yeah, I can't think of a less interesting first round matchup, not only of these playoffs, but in a while. Like Toronto, when it comes to like interest, Kawhi is nice, but doesn't give you anything pre or post game. And like Pascal Siakam is probably my favorite player to watch in this series. But otherwise, like Orlando is such an uninteresting team, and just another team that, like, what the hell are you doing making the playoffs? Like, get yourself back in the lottery and figure it out. I know they can't draft well, but just a franchise, even more so than the Pistons maybe, that have just no direction. And if I'm an Orlando Magic fan, I'm just as peeved about making the playoffs as a Detroit Piston fan. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard, to be fair, in their defense, it's hard to out-tank the Chicago Bulls, the New York Knicks, and the Phoenix Suns.
Right. You get a little unlucky because Vucevic is in a contract year, so he's playing his tail off, and like, was maybe a top 15 guy, top 10 guy even in the league this year, and just carried them to 42 wins with some decent coaching and just a bad bottom half of the Eastern Conference. But like the Bucks and the Pistons and then the Raptors and the Magic in round one, snore city.
Yeah, but it sets up some good round twos, though. That's the thing I love about the East. That's the thing about the East, is the East gets really good starting round two. Number three and six matchup, we got Philly at the 3 seed versus Brooklyn, the 6 seed. Embiid is questionable to play at least game one, but Elton Brand seemed to have since kind of walked that back and state that Embiid will be ready, but there's no real official word yet. To me, the thing about this series that, if anything, makes it interesting is that the Nets guards are tough for Philly, just because Philly struggles against guards. But usually the guards that Philly struggles against are like the extremely shifty ones. because they have Ben Simmons at point guard, who's a monster athlete of his own, but he just can't handle those super shifty Steph Curry like Kyrie Irving like guards. And you know, neither D'Angelo Russell nor Spencer Dinwiddie are that shifty. They're crafty guards, but they're not shifty in that sense. So I still think people are trying to make this a series, Brad. Like, I don't know if you've been listening to other platforms, but they've been talking about Brooklyn just as this team that really has a shot to maybe even upset Philly in the first round. I don't see this, man. I see this as a sweep as well, because I just don't see what Brooklyn can do about Embiid if he's healthy. And then beyond that, it's like Milwaukee, right? It's like Milwaukee, Detroit, where Philly has like the next several best players, all respect to D'Angelo Russell.
Right. So I like the Nets a lot, but not enough to beat the Sixers in the first round, especially if the Sixers can give me all five of their guys to play. Like in the playoffs, the Sixers are built for the playoffs in that,
yeah,
with shortened benches, if you've only got to go six deep, seven deep, there's not many teams that are going to beat that starting five with all five of them healthy. Like, and I don't know if I'm as confident as you are with the Elton Brand comments about Embiid. I just don't trust anything that comes out of that team medically.
Yeah, fair.
So, but at the same time, like those five together have proven that they're as good as anybody in the league in terms of their net rating and plus minus and everything else. So I can like the players on the Nets all I want, you know, D'Lo and Jared Allen specifically and Caris LeVert, but I mean, we're talking about a team that's got, you know, 3.5 all-stars compared to a team that truly shouldn't have had a single one this year in the Nets. So talent-wise, it's just not really that close.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the thing about the Nets, too, is Jared Allen has absolutely been dominated by Embiid in the regular season, I should say. Embiid posting just crazy numbers against him. I think his average against Jared Allen in the Nets is 30 and 14. So he's been just absolutely cooking. Ed Davis as well gets credit for that. But, you know, the Nets, the thing about the Nets has been, and not to discredit them because they have been a great story. They've been this fun team to watch throughout the year and the last couple years, truthfully. But, you know, a lot of what makes the Nets the Nets and a lot of where their wins come from is just being that team that plays hard on a Tuesday night back-to-back. They're that team that you just don't want to play when it's Tuesday and it's a back-to-back for you, and you got to go play the Brooklyn Nets who fight hard the whole game. And that's a great quality to have, don't get me wrong, but in the playoffs when it's everybody's locked in, everybody's focused, there's time of rest between games, it's just a lot of what makes the Nets winnable or in the regular season just doesn't translate to the postseason in my eyes.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing about a lot of these teams. So, like, Toronto for the last couple of years just played harder than you during the regular season, yeah. Whereas the real talented teams, the real ones that are actually competing for titles, like, yeah, only have to play, like, 50 nights a year during the regular season, if that, maybe 30 nights a year. You know, the Bucks and the Warriors and the Rockets and, you know, other true title contenders.
Yeah. All right, let's jump. So, I didn't hear an official prediction from you, actually. I had Philly in four. What did you have?
I'll take Philly in five, just because the Sixers are immature and seem like they don't play every night.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And with Embiid's status to be determined, that's probably a safe bet. Indiana, Boston. Now, this is another series that people are really, really hyping up. The Pacers' bigs, I think, will be a problem for the Celtics. You know, Turner versus Horford is the key matchup because Horford is so vital on both ends of the floor. And Turner's been, rightfully so, a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. But I just expect Horford to just, the veteran mindset, the higher IQ, to just dominate that matchup. And the fact that no one can touch Kyrie. Smart's injury hurts the Celtics, but not in this series because Indiana doesn't really have anybody that's super important to guard. Like, I don't even feel confident in Bogdan's recent play translating just because of the next level elite athleticism required to be in the playoffs. I see him as a good scorer, don't get me wrong. I think he can get 15, 20. He'll probably get 20 plus for them because he is their main scoring option, but I don't expect it to be efficient. So I'm not really worried about anybody scoring on offense for Indiana. And then at the same time, who can guard Kyrie? So I have Celtics in five. But people seem to be like Bill Simmons, everybody in the world seems to be worried about Indiana. Am I overreacting?
I don't think so. Simmons has been a hack for the last couple of months with the way that the Lakers collapsed. I used to love that guy and the way he's carried himself now with the Celtics being kind of a disappointment this season, on top of the fact that the Lakers tanked out. Like, that guy's just been insufferable for a couple of months now. But beside that point, I don't like the Celtics. Like, I think of the top four teams where we all thought they were close going into the season, they're far and away the worst out of the four talent-wise. Like, I always tell people, like, if you just simply throw like credentials onto a board, the only guy they've got is Kyrie. Like, Jason Tatum has been pretty bad this year. Jaylen Brown has been pretty bad this year. Like, those guys have regressed since what were great rookie years and sophomore years. And they just have a lot of like C plus B minus players. And for me, that's just not sexy enough in the playoffs. And I can love Brad Stevens and think he's maybe the second best coach in the NBA all I want. And how the Sixers, since, you know, they pushed Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown to the bench like in late November or whenever that was, they've got like a top five plus minus in the league. And even with their slow start, still like the sixth best plus minus in the league. So the analytics will tell you they're solid. I just, talent-wise, I can't wrap my head around how they even have much more talent than Indiana without Victor Oladipo. But with saying all of that, better coach, best player on the floor, home court advantage, I think the Celtics either do it in six or seven.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, you bring up an interesting point about the Celtics roster, because I was somebody coming into the year that was big on them. You know, the narrative to go off that was easy was, hey, this team was one game away from the NBA Finals, and they're adding essentially Kyrie and Gordon Hayward because Kyrie was out for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so then I really, really bought into that. But then, you know, obviously seeing Gordon Hayward, like, it's going to take time for him. Paul George's season this year shows that it's possible to come back from something like that, but it might take a lot longer time than people are willing to admit. And, you know, just after watching this year, the talent doesn't – not only is the talent not on par with Toronto, Philly, and Milwaukee, excuse me, but also it doesn't fit well, right? Like, Hayward needs the ball in his hands. Kyrie needs the ball in his hands. Tatum needs the ball in his hands. You know, Jaylen Brown wants the ball in his hands. So it's a very tough team to kind of mesh with, and actually just personnel wise, like, they just don't fit. Not only is the talent not there, but even their best players just don't fit well in my eyes.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. And, you know, I think it's almost a misconception that all these guys need the ball, when if they were on any other team, they're just role players. But for some reason, because they play for the Celtics, they're seen as like decent players. Like, Jason Tatum has not been anything more than average this year, and neither is Jaylen Brown. Really, he's been like below average for any NBA role player. So I love Jason Tatum as much as the next guy last year, especially with the way he played in the playoffs. He's just been a disappointment in his sophomore year. And no Marcus Smart, who you could probably say is what, their third best player most nights when he's healthy, behind Horford and Irving. But again, if you just like throw names at a wall, or throw like where you consider these individual guys on a wall, like, for me, Kyrie's not a top 10 player in the league. Al Horford's not a top 20 guy in the league. So, you know, in the playoffs, when it's best player on the floor, there's probably six teams in the Eastern Conference alone that have a better player. You know, all teams that are ahead of Boston, first of all. If Victor Oladipo is healthy for Indiana, like, no, I feel like I'm throwing shade at Kyrie, but like, I think they're close when Oladipo's healthy. And like, D'Lo, if you put the Nets against the Celtics, like, D'Lo's going to have a night that's better than Kyrie's in a series too. So, yeah. You know, I'm kind of a Kyrie hater, I guess, but I just don't get how the talent works there. And I think it's all the credit to Brad Stevens, but eventually you've got to have the talent on the floor.
Exactly. And that's why And that's why, again, I see them moving on this series, just because of, unfortunately, Indiana's circumstance with Victor Oladipo. Had Victor Oladipo been in the series, I think it could have been a very, very interesting series. But yeah, Boston, I have Boston moving on to the next round. Let's jump to the West. We got the Warriors and the Clippers. This one is going to be another quick one to talk about. The only thing I'm interested in, Brad, and maybe you're interested in this series more than I am, the only thing I'm interested in is, because we all know the Clippers are preparing for this offseason to go for Kawhi and all the big names, I'm curious to see how these Clippers players play in the playoffs, like Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Danilo Gallinari, these players that are going to be pitched as the side pieces to the star, as the role players. I'm curious to see how they play in the playoffs. That's really the only thing interesting about this series in my eyes.
Same. I think the Clippers, maybe not sexy, but they're cute, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, they've, especially Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who for me is the most interesting guy on the roster. And while he was still a below average guy in the league this year, a negative net rating, a below average PER, his box plus minus was in the negative, but you know, he's getting an opportunity as a guard that's well built for the NBA. And now we get to see him like in standalone games, as opposed to during the regular season, where I don't know how many Clippers games I'm truly tuning in for. But, mm-hmm. you know, now we get to watch the Clippers against the, obviously the ultimate stretch 3-and-D pace and space team in the Warriors. And how does SGA play against them? And like you said, you know, Gallinari, Harrell, like those are all plus players. I think people forget that, or not forget, but just don't realize that, yeah, while the Clippers like traded away Toby and everybody else, like Gallinari is like a plus player. Mm-hmm. And Montrezl Harrell, with the way he played this year, is a plus player. Like, there is a case to be made that Gallinari maybe should have been an all-star in the West this year. And if he was in the East, probably would have been an all-star. So you just got to kind of, I guess, be careful when I have friends talk about the Clippers and being like this dumpster fire of a roster. It's like, I kind of like their pieces, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do too, man. I'm 100% with you. Like, I like the way they fit, and also just I like the way I like them all individually as well. And I think that I could project and understand and see how these players would play with a superstar around them. But that being said, this is the time to really see how they play at the highest level of play. And, you know, this will be a great indicator. And I think if they, you know, if they just have good games from some of these players that we mentioned, I think that goes an even further way in helping the case of landing a star. Because, you know, you can all of a sudden pitch with this Clippers team, like they want the two max slots to get two guys. And then beyond that, they want to retain a lot of their players. That's their ultimate plan. But even if they don't, I mean, you can see guys like Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Gallinari, you can see those guys sliding and fitting great among a star like a Kawhi Leonard. And so I'm just really excited to see what they do in the playoffs. But that being said, I don't think this is going to be a particularly close series by any means. I have the Warriors in four. What's your like official prediction for it?
Warriors in four, if they wanted to, by 20 every night.
Yeah, exactly. This is the one that's interesting. So this is, to me, the most interesting first-round matchup. The Nuggets versus the Spurs. It's the perfect storyline. It's the NBA storyline that we've been dreaming about for the last month when we've been looking at the seedings. It's the story of the up-and-comer versus the veteran squad. These two teams are very even since January 1st. Teams hold near identical, with the Nuggets holding slight edges in offensive and defensive ratings. To me, Brad, what the series comes down to is the front court. The Spurs have always struggled with athleticism, but the Nuggets front court outside of Plumlee doesn't have that, and that's huge for a player like Aldridge. He's not going to be played off the floor due to elite athleticism. And so you can even argue that the Spurs have the more athletic front court of the two teams. And so I'm really thinking that that's going to be the key advantage. Denver plays well at home. They're the number one record in the league at 34-7. While the Spurs are -9 on the road at 16-25. So there's a big advantage there. But that being said, I'm going Spurs in seven, just because I think the front court's going to be a real issue for the Nuggets. And then also the fact that their go-to shot creator, Jamal Murray's been inconsistent. That's going to be tough for a young team. When their back's against the wall, they need a bucket. They're going to give the ball to Murray to try and get something, but they're not going to be confident in that because he's been up and down a roller coaster all season. And that's going to really be tough for a young team to overcome, is not only are we in a situation, a new situation, but we're also in a situation where we're not totally confident in our own guy.
Totally. And this is the toughest series for me, I think, because any series with the Spurs is tough because you just don't want to count them out, I guess. But at the same time, you know, Denver's a team that I can love all of their individual pieces a lot, especially that top three of Murray, Jokic, and Harris, and then just the veteran toughness and savviness of Millsap, who's still a decent player. But with saying that, I think the point that you bring up about, like, who takes the last shot for Denver, who's got the ball in his hands with, you know, 2 minutes left in a tight game on the road in San Antonio, like, I just don't know. I can't trust Jamal Murray in that situation because, one, he's just not efficient enough in normal game situations. Like, just a 50 EFG and, like, doesn't shoot it from the field well enough. And you trust San Antonio to defend their tails off in the playoffs. And then, like, what do? You give the ball to Jokic and let him bang with LaMarcus Aldridge down the stretch? I just don't know who has the ball down the stretch for Denver that I trust enough to be like, yes, go get me a bucket, and then also on the other end, defend your tail off and stop Aldridge. Or even DeMar DeRozan, who I think is a terrible basketball player. But this series is interesting because it's going to be close, but it's very much like the Toronto-Orlando series for me on the other side, in that there just aren't many guys that I like watch that I like to watch play basketball for these two teams outside of, like, Jokic and Murray when they're on the floor together. Otherwise, like, this may be the series that I don't catch any games in, to be honest with you.
Well, but this is – oh, go ahead.
Give me the Nuggets in seven.
Okay, Nuggets in seven.
Because I think they have the best player in Jokic, the third best player in Gary Harris, maybe, like, or Jamal Murray. I just don't know. Give me them in seven. I don't like it, but
yeah. I mean, if you're pointing to anything, it's the home record. They've been elite at home. They're the number one. They have the number one home record in the league, and the Spurs are -9 on the road. So there's a huge differential in performances there. And with Denver holding home court, that could be the advantage that swings it. But the thing I wanted to mention to you is, you talk about DeMar DeRozan, and we all know that his history and his struggles in the playoffs are well documented in Toronto. I have I'm curious to see if somehow the Spurs magic just fixes that, and all of a sudden he's like DeMar DeRozan in the regular season in the playoffs. Like, I'm actually really curious to see if the Spurs just, like, magically fix that with their San Antonio ways.
That very well could be the case. And, like, the Spurs during the regular season fix him a little bit because they play such a slow pace. And that's one of my issues with them, is, like, they just don't move the ball enough to, in the playoffs, get you enough possessions because they play so slow. But that helps DeRozan. I never really considered DeRozan to even be, like, a top 30 guy in the league, and I still really don't. But he fits better in the Spurs system than really in any other system, because he doesn't have to play fast. He doesn't have to be, like, overly efficient. He's still just an inefficient player. And in the playoffs, I feel like that gets exploited a little more, but who knows?
Yeah. All right. So this is the one where we disagree. Finally, the first one we disagree. A lot of the series haven't been too tough, but Nuggets, Spurs. I got Spurs in seven. You got Nuggets in seven. Let's jump to Portland, OKC. OKC is interesting because they struggled the last, like, 3 weeks of the regular season before winning the last five games. Mm-hmm. But they should be the favorite, you know, given the star power, the injury to Nurkic, plus CJ McCollum's been quietly struggling all season. If Paul George can get healthier, OKC's size and physicality should dominate Portland. And the thing I'm looking for is Kanter, Damian Lillard pick and roll on defense will get absolutely torched by OKC. Those are kind of the keys to me, is just the fact that OKC is bigger, more athletic, and also that Cantor Dame pick and roll, which is going to have to play substantial minutes in this series, is going to be absolutely torched. And like you talked about earlier in the podcast with matchups, that is a matchup that is just bodes terrible for Portland.
Yeah, I would be in lockstep with everything you just said there. Portland for me is another team that I just don't fully understand, and that I think Damian Lillard is a hell of a basketball player. Like, you could make an argument that he's a top 10 guy in the league. That's fine, but outside of him, I thought Nurkic was probably the second best player on this team during the regular season before definitely. He got hurt. Like better than CJ McCollum. Yeah. And so you lose your second best player. You're already undersized as a roster anyway, and you're going up against a very tall, big, long, athletic, defensive group. So for me, and Portland has struggled in the playoffs, right? So give me Oklahoma City with a little bit of momentum down the stretch, like you said, winning their last five. And I think OKC wins in six at their home, maybe split in Portland. You take two, you drop one in game five, and then finish it off in game six. And I think when it comes down to it, at least this season, Paul George, probably the best player on the floor between the two teams. And if it does come down to it, like last 2 minutes, again, bringing that up, you know, Damian Lillard is manned by Paul George. And you like that matchup defensively for the Thunder. And on the other side, who is guarding Paul George off the bounce? Oh, is it Al-Farouq Aminu? Like, sure, he's a decent defender, but give me George on both sides of the ball there.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. I'm going OKC in five. I think Russ is going to shoot him out of one just because Russ is Russ. But yeah, I think OKC is a clear favorite. You bring up a great point about Paul George, not only offensively, who's going to stop him, but also on defense, him guarding Dame. I think he could do a lot. The interesting thing, though, is just to watch is how much healthier could Paul George get. He's looked a little bit healthier this last week, and I'm hoping that the timing before the playoffs, also with the space in between games in the playoffs, will help him. But I'm just putting this out there now, Brad, and I just want to see what you think of before we move on to last series is, the way the seeding shakes out, the way the matchups shake out, OKC, all of a sudden, a month ago, we were looking at them as the biggest threat to the Warriors in the West, and then that fell apart when they struggled. But now the way the seeding's played out, I think they have a path to the Western Conference Finals again. I'm just putting that out there.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And that's only because they missed Houston and Golden State before then.
And Utah.
And Utah, sure, if you like Utah.
Yeah.
But I would say at this point, OKC, if they can get past Portland, are probably going to end up in the conference finals. It just sucks that we won't get a Houston Golden State conference finals, because that's what it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you're all for it too, right? The 1-16 seeds and just making it that instead of conferences.
I guess. I don't know. I just haven't really considered it enough. I hate the fact that, like, the Pistons are in the playoffs, like, for my own personal bias, but at the same time, like, the Clippers are 14 games. They almost won 50 games this year in the 8th seed in the West. You know what I mean? Like, they get punished by winning almost 50 games, and the Pistons are over here, like, you know, like, oh, yeah, we snuck in, too. And, like, what if the Hornets would have made the playoffs and they were under 500 this year while Sacramento played their tail off and they finished with the same record and no dice?
By the way, it's crazy. Side note: we didn't talk about this at all, but the fact that Dave Yeager got fired for that season is absolutely maddening.
Oh well, screw the Kings, like
yeah,
and screw Vlade Divac, like he has no idea what's going on over there, and you know, lucked into the Buddy Hield trade, and that's worked out okay, and like sure made a decent pick with De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley, but no one knows what they're doing over there. They're just so poorly run.
Yeah, poorly run. All right, let's jump to the last series before you got to get going. Rockets versus Jazz. The Rockets went 9-1 against the Jazz last year, playing them in the regular season and the playoffs. Jazz have an elite defense. They're peaking at the right time. I trust their offense more than last year. That was my big sticking point last year, was I just didn't trust an offense that relied so much on a first-year player. And, you know, not to any dismissal of Donovan Mitchell and what he's done. He's been fantastic, but just the fact that it's hard for a rookie player to run an offense, especially when he has that much of a shoulder to burden. To me, it comes down to the Capella-Gobert matchup. That's huge. Gobert's been an elite player. He's an all-NBA player in my eyes. Capella has not been. He struggled, but he's kind of rebounding better since the injury. Capella has to be in at least the same ballpark as Gobert to help neutralize that advantage if Houston wants to win this series. Rockets defense isn't where it is last year, but if Harden doesn't fatigue, I think they should win this series, given the best player, the theory of having the best player in the playoffs, plus home court advantage. And Chris Paul, depending on where he lands, he might be the second or he might be the fourth best player in the series. That's kind of an X factor as well. I got Rockets in six, but I don't feel confident with this. Where are you leaning on this series?
I have no idea how many games the Rockets are going to win this series in. They're going to win it, and I think it's almost a little overplayed that Utah is like this analytics nightmare for teams, because fourth best strength of schedule rating on Basketball Reference. You know, they've got a top five net rating, all this other stuff. But to me, they're a team that the analytics favor because of how good Rudy Gobert is. And the analytics typically favor bigs because of rebounding and how overvalued they are.
Yeah.
But I still think Gobert, like you said, is an all-NBA guy. He deserves to be one of those top three centers this year. And in this series is the second best player behind Harden. I think Donovan Mitchell is not the player that like the national media thinks he is. I know we all fell in love with him last year. I just don't know if he's really anything more than like I just don't even know if he's any better than Devin Booker, truthfully. And I think Booker is probably better right now. So, you know, we fall in love with Donovan Mitchell, but if you just said, hey, the Jazz have Devin Booker instead of Donovan Mitchell, would you know, national media even consider them to take a game off of Houston? I think Mitchell like gets hyped up as this star player, and he is just far from it in terms of efficiency and his passing. Yeah. And so, and defensively, he's still kind of a liability. Like, Gobert for me carries this team to a game or two just because of how good he is defensively. And I think a lot of Houston's struggles this year are really not about themselves. It's more so about how other teams do with Harden. Like, are they defending him like the Lakers did when they beat him in the second half of the season, when you just sag off of him after he breaks through the three-point line because he is so deathly afraid of taking any shot that's not a three or a layup. And it's almost instilled in the Rockets so much to not take mid-range jumpers. They almost like forget how to dribble a basketball in the mid-range. Like, outside of Chris Paul, like once they get inside the three-point line, they're like, what the hell do we do? Like, you know, like, so Harden struggles sometimes, and that's why he fouled out of that game against the Lakers in the second half of the year that LA ended up beating them in. And I can't trust Chris Paul's health or how engaged he is in the game. I think Chris Paul is great. I think he's like a top 20, 25 guy all time. I love him, but with saying all of that, Harden is just so much better than everybody on the floor. He's going to get you 40 if he wants to, and he's going to win the series. And I guess to close out the thought, probably six.
Okay, so you're with me. Good, that gives me some confidence, because I didn't truthfully feel confident with Rockets in six. A lot of people are actually picking the Jazz in this series, and I find it crazy. I think your points about Donovan Mitchell are great. You brought up his inefficiency, and I think people gloss over the fact that Donovan Mitchell has had long, long stretches both seasons that where he's been in major, major slumps, and he's also been consistently inefficient all season long, both seasons. So I think you bring up a great point about that, and that if that's your leader on offense, it's going to be tough to win some games, especially against a team that's going to be elite and put up as many points as Houston Rockets do.
Exactly. Like, I think Derek Favors is maybe a better player than Donovan Mitchell. That, I mean, that's not actually, but like, if you just like think about it, like Mitchell's a negative net rating this year, like an offensive rating of 104, a defensive rating of 107. I know those numbers are not great when it comes to looking at catch-all statistics, but like Rudy Gobert's a plus 33 in that mark. He's got a 133 offensive rating. That's sickening. I mean,
that's amazing.
You know, you can't be a wing in today's NBA and for me to like you, shoot 43% from the floor. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you just can't do that. You can't have a below 50% EFG and be considered a true wing scorer just because you score 20 a game or, you know, 25 a game or whatever it is. Like, you're just Zach LaVine or Devin Booker at that point, and those guys aren't considered all-stars the way that Donovan Mitchell is.
Very, very true. Very fair point. All right, Brad, you got to get going. Thank you for coming on the podcast, man. I greatly appreciate it. It was great reconnecting with you. I had fun talking hoops with you. And once again, man, I really enjoy this just for the simple fact that you were the one that got me into podcasting. The first podcast I ever did was when I was on your podcast. So so your influence and your impact on me is great, and I appreciate all of it.
Appreciate that, dude. I've been following, obviously, for the last couple of years. It sucks that it's taken this long to reconnect on air a little bit, but yeah, it was fun, and thankfully we didn't have to talk about the dumb player survey or Paul Pierce being a jack wagon, so that was good.
Yeah, man, I'm not interested in all that, you know, that regular season, let's just stir up some drama type stuff. I'm just here for the basketball, man.
Well, sounds good, dude.
All right, man, take care, and I'll have you on the podcast again soon, all right?
Sounds good, man. See ya.